Packers fans, and welcome into the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined as always by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood, where, Spoon and I are still at Lambeau Field, as you can tell. Ryan has not had an earlier day with a noon game, but still a lot to talk about. It was not a trap game, as we talked about before the game, Ryan, because you said if it was a trap game, that would mean that they have a really decent chance of losing to Washington next week. But still, one of those noon games, gloomy day, everyone sort of came out flat, and then it bit the Packers in the butt. They lost 27-10 to the New York Jets. And let me actually just start with this. Let me pose it to you first, Ryan, and then we'll come to you, Spoon. Was this game an anomaly, which is what we kind of thought last week might be? Is this a team that's still figuring out who they are, or is this who they are? A not good team.
It's such a long season. I don't know if this is who they are long term, but this is who they are right now. And the reason why this isn't a trap game is because the Packers aren't good enough to have trap games. To have a trap game, you have to be like this really good team that might overlook an opponent and lose to an inferior opponent. That's not the Packers. That's not how they're set up. They could lose next week to Washington. There's a decent chance they lose that game. There's a decent chance they lose every game, because at this point, there's so much for this team to figure out. It's a very lukewarm, mediocre team. Yeah, I don't think they're terrible, but they're not good. And they're not going to be good unless they go and figure this stuff out. So it's a long season. And at the end of the day, 3-3, who cares? I mean, who cares about the record? Throw the record out 6 weeks in. Because the only thing that matters long-term is whether they figure these things out that have led to these losses or not. We don't know the answer to that. And if they do, look, the last time the Packers actually won a Super Bowl, they got in backdoor as a sixth seed, and they ran the table on the road, and they got a championship out of it. So if that's how this season ends, today doesn't matter. But if they actually don't figure this stuff out, it's going to be a very early offseason for this team.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, because several Packers players in the locker room after Sunday's game mentioned the Rams, the Bengals, some of these other teams that started off really, really slow and then, you know, found their way into the Super Bowl game. The 49ers team of last year, you know, not to the Super Bowl, but at least to the conference championship, and have figured it out. But that being said, Spoon, do they have enough in place to figure it out and get there? And again, I know it's six games in, but from what you've seen so far.
Well, the most troublesome thing I think you can say is that, to me, the game wasn't a surprise. It was just a microcosm of how they've been playing through 6 weeks. They don't finish strong. I think they've scored two touchdowns in the fourth quarter the entire year. They don't finish strong defensively. They don't turn the ball over as a defense. They don't know whether they want to run the ball or whether they want to pass the ball. And let's face it, LaFleur made a really strategic error, I think, in not taking the bye after the London game. You have to remember that this was the first trip they'd ever taken to London for the organization, for the players, everybody. Mm-hmm. So nobody really knew what this was going to be like, what it would entail. You know, all the other teams have gone there and they have people who are experienced in it. And I expected them to be flat. You know, everything I had read was that teams that come back and don't have the bye are really flat. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there had only been five teams that hadn't had a bye out of 60 going into this game. And so,
talking about the week after London.
Yes, right, that had actually played a game the week after London. So I'm not using that as an excuse for why they stunk, but it's another part of the equation of, you know, and things that they just are not getting right.
The Giants played today, too, and they looked pretty good.
And they won. Yep, and Minnesota won. Minnesota and New Orleans both won after their games. So,
well, it's entirely plausible that when – Matt LaFleur faced that decision, he thought the Jets would be the Jets, right? Mm-hmm. I think that in the long-term view, they kind of snuck up on him and this team, kind of like they've snuck up on the NFL. I don't think anyone had the Jets at 4-2 after six games.
Yeah, I don't know if he knew what the opponents were at the time, because they had to commit to a week.
Oh, you're saying when he said that, not when.
Yeah, like, okay, so yeah. they knew what their London game would be, but did they know that the next week was the Jets? I don't know. Anyway, either way, I just think it's a tactical error, and, you know, the only way it turns out good is if they have a bunch of injuries that the end of the year, and having that bye really pans out.
Right. There's so much to discuss in this game, but let's just start with the defense. They said during the week, Joe Barry, Jair Alexander, Rasul Douglas, so many promised adjustments. And we actually saw the adjustments, I feel like, especially at least in the first half. You know, we saw a lot more man, a lot of press up on the line. Ryan, I know you and I were both tracking Jair Alexander the whole time, and he played a lot all over the place. He moved into the slot, and when he would move into the slot, Rasul Douglas would move outside. He was basically tracking Garrett Wilson, number 17 for the Jets. And again, you know, we saw a much more, I don't know if I want to say aggressive just yet, Spoon, but a defense willing to play much closer to the ball, it felt like, or at least the secondary. Before we get into the second half and what happened there on defense, on the first half, Spoon, did you feel like the adjustments that were promised were delivered?
Yes. I thought they had an excellent game plan. Mm-hmm. Anytime Garrett Wilson moved into the slot, Jair Alexander went and got him. And Garrett Wilson is Zach Wilson's favorite receiver on third down. Mm-hmm. And Jair Alexander went and shut him down. The guy had one catch for 8 yards. I like the fact they were playing their man under. They had their two safeties back, and they played man underneath, and it gave Stokes and even Savage, I thought, had a pretty good game. It's just that when the Jets finally later in the game kind of adjusted, knew where Alexander was going to be, got him and Stokes mixed up on a couple of plays. And then, you know, they ran that really nice end around that just sucked everybody in. And it's almost like Michael Floor knew, was working to certain things as he figured out what Joe Barry was doing.
Which is what you should do as a play caller.
Right.
Yeah.
And I don't think Joe Barry responded very well.
Right. What were you going to say, Ryan?
I was just making a joke.
Oh, I'm sure it was hilarious.
Yes, thank you.
The drive that kind of broke the defense, because they held onto the rope for as long as they could with the offense giving them absolutely nothing, not playing complimentary football at all. They held onto the rope as long as they could. It started to slip in the third quarter when the Jets had a 4-play 74-yard drive. And it started with a decent, got them behind the chains, but then there was an 11-yard pickup over the middle, and then a huge play to Corey Davis, I believe it was, down the right sideline that was on Eric Stokes. And then the following play was the end around that you talked about, the win for the touchdown. And, you know, Eric Stokes talked about that play after the game. He said, that was on me. You know, that drive happened because of me. And he said, I should have gotten my head around. I can't believe I didn't get my head around and track the ball. He said, I was tracking his eyes and his hands, and I should have looked back for the ball because I could have knocked it away. And I think you said at the time, Ryan, I'm kind of surprised they haven't gone after him more, given that what Jair Alexander was doing to Garrett Wilson. That drive resulted in the touchdown. The subsequent offensive drive is started on the 30-yard line because Keyshawn Nixon had a great return out of the end zone, got it to the 30-yard line, and then the Packers ended with a sack, and that was when the punt was blocked and returned for a touchdown by the Jets. All of that to say, Ryan, having heard what Spoon said, that he felt like the adjustments were promised were delivered, do you feel like the defense sort of fell apart in the second half, or was it one of those things where it was like That drive was a backbreaker. They held on as long as they could. The offense gave them nothing to work with.
I have a hard time crucifying the defense today. This is two straight games, really, where this offense has put this defense in nothing but bad positions. And the defense came out today and gave up nothing. They were even better than the Jets defense in the first half. And as you said, they held the rope as long as they could. And I, at the end of the day, I get that it's professional football and there are no excuses. But this offense literally gave the defense nothing. You have to play some semblance of complementary football. And if your offense is going to continue to keep the defense on the field because it can't string drives together, wear out a defense as it's done for two straight weeks now, this is the results you're going to get with most defenses. It's not an excuse. It's just reality. It's a fact of life in this league. The offense has got to step up to the plate and actually take some competitive at-bats, or you're going to probably see this defense fade late in games. And that's what you've seen for two straight weeks. Defense will tell you they got to play better, but the offense has got to help out its defense more than that.
Especially, I mean, Breece Hall finished with 20 rushes for 116 yards and 34. I'm sorry. The long was 34. Woo. 20 rushes for 116 yards and a touchdown. I mean, you keep wearing down the defense. Eventually you're just going to be able to run all over them. Is the rush defense spoon still as much, if not even a bigger concern? Because, I mean, yes, you have these running backs that are special. Breece Hall is a good running back. Saquon Barkley is an incredible running back. But every team has a guy. So, I mean, what is it going to take to sort of get this rush defense to where it needs to be? What did they show you today? How far off are they?
Well, it wasn't a good day. In the second half, this gets really quick, and they weren't tackling very well at the end. They looked kind of worn down to me. Mm-hmm. But they have to figure out a way how to get the ball back. Mm-hmm. You know, a good defense gets mm-hmm. the ball back, and it's not just interceptions. I mean, when they're around a quarterback, they have got to knock the ball out. And they were around Zach Wilson a number of times, and he escaped. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they had chances to try to strip the ball. They've got to figure out ways to do that. I don't know. You know, Savage had a chance at an interception in the end mm-hmm. zone. I thought he could have had that. Alexander had one on the sideline that I thought he could have had that. I mean, Adrian Amos said that after the game. He said great defenses make those plays, you know, have turnovers, and they're just not doing that. And so that comes down to some individuals. I thought the defensive play was good for a half, and then I thought they kind of got back into some of their bad habits. Mm-hmm. You know, Quay Walker was all over the place. Devondre Campbell has been all over the map. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know about his play against the run. I'd like to look closer at it, but not consistent enough.
Mm-hmm. Let's
go back to Eric Stokes being on the field, though, in base over Rasul Douglas, who, by the way, hasn't been this year, but was a ball hawk last year. Was a playmaker, something that I completely agree with you, Spoon. This defense is completely lacking. I've been saying it for weeks. I get on the offensive side that there's other personnel decisions that are worth discussing, but the ice has got to be getting really thin for Eric Stokes being in base over Rasul Douglas. He had a rough game today. He had a rough game last week. He had a rough game week one. Justin
had a rough game today. I didn't think so. He had a rough game. Gave up the one ball, but.
Yeah, other than the 40-yard pass that changed the momentum and led to a touchdown drive, yeah, he was fine. He's been giving up big plays all season. It's been all season.
What were the others?
Justin Jefferson ate him alive.
He ate everyone alive.
Eric Stokes was on him. Jair Alexander wasn't. Then last week, the Giants had two, three plays on him. Mm-hmm. It's been happening all season.
Yeah, I'm not sure I agree with that, but I think Stokes gives them one of the things they've not done is given up a lot of plays over their heads, And this was one of the first that I can remember Stokes giving up a deep ball. And it's going to happen. Every corner is going to give up a deep ball, you know, mm-hmm. once in a while. The more embarrassing play was the Berrios run. I mean, mm-hmm. they could have easily forced that into a field goal. He didn't give up a touchdown. I mean, he doesn't give up touchdowns. And to me, that's as important as anything. And how they, you know, couldn't get Berrios down to me is really, to me, that was the story of that drive.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to see Stokes in more.
I think Eric Stokes has had a regression in year two.
Sophomore slump.
That's what I'm seeing.
I want to see him in a couple more weeks of the type of defense they played today before I'd be ready to say that. He was grossly misused in the first 5 weeks. He should not be playing that far off the ball. That is not his game. He's not a soft zone corner.
Rasul Douglas can't say. I mean, Rasul Douglas is the one that's never played slot before, and he's the one that's been playing slot basically all season. I'd argue that the one game that Rasul Douglas has played really well was against the Patriots when he was at his natural perimeter position. You know, he if you want to talk about misuse, and I get, you know, look, not an excuse for Rasul Douglas, because Rasul Douglas has said since training camp, sign me up, I'm a slot corner no matter what. I mean, he's embraced that. So it's not like he's complained about it. But you want to talk about misuse, it's the guy that's never played the position he's playing right now.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, they've all been misused.
He played outside today. He played outside every time Alexander went inside.
Yeah. Today.
So, you know.
Today was the first, this first half was the first time that corner unit has been used the way they should have been used. That's what I'm saying. And Eric Stokes is part of that. And so I guess I'm just not ready to say he's been a disappointment just yet.
I just think it's
Spoon said it's time to move on. We talked about the defense's is troubles in the rush defense, but the offensive line for the Packers couldn't get anything going either. This is a trenches league, guys, and they just got whooped today in the trenches. I mean, Quinnen Williams and Quincy Williams really just kind of did whatever they wanted. They hit gaps. They got around the edge. I mean, Ryan, I know you focused a lot on the offensive line after this game. What do you think? Was it one big issue, or was it a lot of little issues? Was it personnel? What stood out?
It was a lot of big issues, I would say. That's why I'm already left Lambeau Field, because my story was really easy to write. This was one of the worst offensive line performances the Packers have had in years. You've got to go back to week six, the fifth game of 2020 at Tampa Bay, to see a time that Aaron Rodgers was hit 9 times in a game. And that was 13 that week against the Bucs, a 38-10 complete flop of a performance. You got to go back to the 2020 NFC Championship game to see the last time that Aaron Rodgers was sacked more than 4 times in a game. That was obviously against the Bucs. And the difference, it wasn't just the protection today. More surprising is the fact that they couldn't open any. Spoon said at the very beginning that they have to decide whether or not they want to run the ball. I think they decided coming into the day that they wanted to run the ball. Each of their first two drives started with a run. The first mm-hmm. play of the game was a 1-yard stuff to A.J. Dillon. The first play of the second drive was a 5-yard loss in an outside zone that was blocked perfectly on the perimeter to Aaron Jones. But John Runyon got beat by Quinnen Williams and Aaron Jones got dropped for a 5-yard loss. They wanted to run today. The Jets shut that down. It was Aaron Jones and A.J. Dillon combined for 60 yards in the game. It's only the second time since the start of last season when they became the tandem in the backfield that they've been held to 60 yards combined in a game. So from a protection standpoint, from a run game standpoint, they could get nothing going. And if you're off and it's been a rough go for this offensive line, not surprisingly, because you knew working in David Bakhtiari and Elgton Jenkins, it was going to be rough, but it's been a rough go throughout the season. Aaron Rodgers week two against the Bears was hit 8 times. Mm-hmm. It's been a consistent theme. And the thing that I don't get, we talk about personnel decisions. I want to be very clear. I have no idea if Josh Nyman can play a serviceable right tackle. I have no clue because we haven't seen it. His 800 snaps and 10 starts over the past year have all been on the left side. I'm not saying that Josh Nyman at right tackle is the answer, because I don't know if it is or isn't. But at this point, there's no excuse not to try it, because what they have tried is not working. Elgton Jenkins playing better at right tackle the last couple of weeks, but he's better at guard. You saw them become so desperate at right guard today that they put Jake Hansen in for Royce Newman. Jake Hansen only got a handful of snaps because he injured his biceps, and then Royce Newman went back. They're clearly searching for answers on the right side of that offensive line, particularly at right guard. On paper, you put Josh Nyman at right tackle. He's played a fine left tackle. I have no idea if he can play the right side. You move Elgton Jenkins back into guard. At least try it to see if that works, because nothing else has.
You addressed everything I was going to ask you about that. So that kind of wrapped it up. But Spoon, I do want to hear from you on this too, this issue. I mean, is that something that you can kind of do middle of the season? Do you just at least have to try it? Because Elgton Jenkins looked a little lost today. He looked like Royce Newman looked like he was swimming. I mean, how much can you shuffle before it becomes desperate and just play musical chairs?
Yeah, I think you can do it. I don't think it's that big of a deal to do it. You just have to be certain that it's the right thing to do. And they needed to find out about Royce Newman. But here's the thing that to me was the issue today. And it's, so you've claimed that you're a running team and you're going to, Dylan and Jones are going to be your go-tos and your bell cows and everything like that. And then you go against the Giants and you don't run the ball. Mm-hmm. And you have other games where you don't run the ball. Well, after you've just gone to London and you got your butt kicked and you didn't run the ball and you did all these RPOs, your offensive line is not like coming in all lathered over having just, pounded the ball on someone with confidence, with seeing all these different kinds of stunts and slants that the Jets gave. I think they've done them a really disservice by going with, all the RPOs and everything. And I wonder if any of that is what Rodgers was talking about with simplifying. Mm-hmm. I think about this. Every time they do an RPO and Rodgers doesn't hand the ball off, these guys are running their blocking and then they turn around and like, oh, nobody there, or they kind of half-ass it, mm-hmm. because they know the guy's not going to get the ball. I mean, give him the ball and pound the ball. I think that was part of the problem today, was they weren't used to that speed that the Jets had. They're not cohesive as a run unit because they don't run it that often. I do think they're going to have to make a decision on Royce Newman. He is a good run blocker. He's overmatched as a pass blocker, so mm-hmm. they may have to move Jenkins inside. Jenkins isn't playing very well. That's a problem. They just got to figure it out. They gotta give them some carries.
It doesn't matter if Royce Newman's a good run blocker if they don't run the ball.
Right, right. Yeah. Then you go with Nyman all the way. They're going to keep mm-hmm. passing it.
How much of this, whoever wants to chime in here first, go for it. How much of this falls on Aaron Rodgers' offensive issues?
I think he said it after the game that he's going to have to raise his level of play a tick in order to come out on the winning side of these.
How big is this tick?
Yeah, he's got better. I mean, point, it's on everybody on that offensive side. There's nobody, no other than Aaron Jones, maybe. There's nobody that you can say, it's not on you. It's on everyone. Mm-hmm. He's got to play better. I'm not saying anything other than that. But there's no quarterback that can get hit 9 times in a game and sack 4 times and look good. You do that to Patrick Mahomes, he's not going to look good. They haven't protected, and they did not protect today. They have to protect better. Now, some of that's on Aaron Rodgers too, right? Because great quarterback play is the remedy for an offensive line, getting the ball out quicker, being able to, he held the ball a bit and he's been holding the ball a bit more, which maybe is not all that surprising considering he's working in these new receivers and even getting on the same page again with Robert Tonyan. That's going to take some time to get your rhythm back in the passing game. But there's just not a quarterback in the league that can get hit 9 times in a game, sacked 4 times, and look great.
What's the old saying? It don't matter who you got back there if you can't keep them upright.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that being said, he also has held on to the ball for a little bit. Spoon, going into the week, we knew Rodgers had an issue with his thumb, his right thumb. This is the nicest way to say it. He threw some ducks today.
Yeah.
Do you think that comes back to the thumb?
Possibly, but he's been throwing some pretty lousy deep balls as it is. I mean, he had a chance to hit Dobbs on a deep one, and it looked like that was going to be the one. I think that was a fourth down, right?
No, was that the third, and then the fourth was looking for Bobby? I think that's what it was. Are you talking about towards the end of the game, like 4th and 14?
No, it was earlier than that.
There was a fourth down where he went deep to Dobbs. Yeah. I'm guessing that you're not talking about the deep shot that he had on the left side where Dobbs is bracketed in double cover.
No, it was on the right side. He got him matched up with
– fourth and third from the 46, deep incomplete to Dobbs in the second quarter.
Yeah, the guy was – I had no problem with that shot because they knew they had man coverage on Dobbs. He was open, and the throw was off by, you know, a number of inches. But those are just throws that it seemed like he made regularly to Adams. You know, he's for whatever reason, just getting it down the field has been a problem. Too many times it's just not coming out of his hand very well.
Here's the
problem with Dobbs was the duck, like the compounding one.
Rodgers. You still see, it's not like it's gone away completely. You still see it there. The ball he hit to Alan Lazard in double coverage down the left side for 35 yards, as good of a pass as you're going to see. The touchdown, I thought, was a really gutsy play. I mean, the guy's been brutalized all game, and he stands in there, takes a personal roughing the passer penalty, and still delivers a good ball to Alan Lazard for the score. But then you see, you know, the deep ball down the right side to Aaron Jones, where Aaron Jones is wide open. He's wide open. It's a gimme for Aaron Rodgers. And he puts the ball out of bounds. It doesn't give him a chance to catch the ball. That's a duck. You see that too. So the consistency has not been there. It's not like he can't throw deep anymore, because every once in a while he pulls a rabbit out of his hat and voila, I'm Aaron Rodgers. But it's not there consistently. And it's got to be there, because that's what this offense needs right now.
Yeah, they have not completed a pass – with a ball in the air of 40 or more yards this year. The longest, I think, was Sammy Watkins' 55-yarder, I think, went like 38 in the air. So they're not stretching the field at all. And I don't know if Sammy Watkins' return will change that. It sounds like he's pretty close to that he might practice this week. And he was working out on the side.
This was his fourth week.
He's eligible. Yeah, he's eligible to practice, but I don't know if he's going to turn everything around for him. We'll see.
That on that drive, Spoon, with the fourth down throw to Dobbs, he started that drive looking deep for Dobbs. That was the duck. That was the bad one.
Yeah.
And then ended that drive looking deep for Dobbs, and it went just off his fingers.
But the one that was a duck was almost a good thing that it was a duck, because it was in double coverage.
It could have been picked off.
It's just not a high percentage play.
But on that drive, this is what I'm rolling into. After that deep one to Dobbs on the first play, he came back. He took a quick shot to Tonyan in the flat. It was a 6-yard gain. The next play was 3rd and 4 from the 31. He got flushed. He scrambled. It was a scramble drill. Bobby on a comeback. It was 16 yards down the sideline. Tonyan had 10 targets or 10 catches today for 90 yards, the most ever by a tight end in Packers club history. His reemergence kind of be the fail safe as this offense still figures itself out.
What was the most in Packers history, the targets or
No, the catch, he had 10 catches, and that's the most for a tight end in a single game in Packers history.
I realized that was a record.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know if Spoon has anything to say on it. I thought he looked better today, and that's, you know.
He was there a lot when a play broke down or when they needed to take a quick shot just to kind of get the ball out.
Yeah, he was a good check down, I think, today. But you're still not seeing him stretch the field and mm-hmm. make big plays. But, you know, getting 10 catches, that was probably good for him. Probably was accelerated chance to see action, you know, make football moves, all that kind of stuff. But he's just not back yet. He's mm-hmm. just not – doesn't quite have that quickness that he had before he got hurt.
Is there anything else on offense either one of you feel like you need to address before we move on to special teams? I'm giving you this platform.
I said my piece. You gotta try Josh Nyman at right tackle because nothing else is working, and I have no idea if that's the answer, but you have to try it.
And Matt LaFleur said after the game that it all personnel changes are on the table, right?
Yeah. With Randall Cobb hurt, are they going to use a little bit more Amari Rodgers?
He had a nice catch across. What was Amari Rodgers' final stats?
One for one. 14 yards.
But he was in there. He was in there for more snaps. I don't think there's a snap count in this book yet, is there?
No.
He was in there. He was on the field a lot more.
It's kind of amazing how accepted it is at this point, right? Because you've got a third-round pick a year ago at this position, which is a position that is floundering, that needs spark, that needs to be ignited. And it's just like out of sight, out of mind. That it's stunning how much it's accepted that, yeah, Amari Rodgers finally got a catch today, his first in six games. And it is what it is, right? I mean, ordinarily, third-round pick at this position, it's a big problem. It is a big problem.
That's why, you know, more mistakes are made on wide receivers, why the Packers never take them in the first round, because so many mistakes are made on wide receivers.
That being said, and we don't have to get into a deep conversation about this subject, but just your opinion, I know we get asked a lot about possible free agent signings. Everybody thinks OBJ is somehow going to be the first person to come back from an ACL in like 6 months. But is the free agent signing at a receiver position, is that less of a possibility and the better possibility a trade before the deadline?
It's all about money. Yeah, I was thinking about this after the game. At the end of the day, it's a very cap-strapped team. So it's going to come down to money, not just the market, which is also a big part. Who's available, but the money.
Yeah. Well, the one thing that mitigates that is if you grab someone in late October or just before the trade deadline, you're only on the hook for half their salary for that year. So let's say it's
DJ Moore.
I don't know what his base salary is. I'm trying to think of somebody whose base salary I know who has a $3 million base salary.
You just know 1. Random people's base salary off the top of your head?
Well, no, I looked into it for my call, but now I can't remember any of it. So, I mean, if it's a guy with a $3 million base salary, the cap hit would be 1.5 because half the season's over. So they can afford to do it. They can't afford to take on an $8 million guy. I don't think they want to do that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's a lot of time between now and November 1st, and there will be some teams that are dropping out. I thought New England would be a chance for them to make a deal. But New England's all of a sudden back in it and playing really well. Bailey Zappi's just like tearing it up.
Yes, that's old Western Kentucky. And then if Christian Watson is going to continue to be hampered by hamstring, they're going to have to do something. Right?
Yeah.
He's not going to be doing much this year. I mean, I've said it a couple times that once a rookie is hurt, the only time that I can recall that being a huge turnaround was James Starks in 2010 when he was hurt all year. And then out of nowhere, he just is like the star in the playoffs. That was unheard of. So maybe Christian Watson, their hold out hope that he could do that. But right now, I just don't see his future being all that great for this year. I'm not saying future beyond this year, but for this year.
Christian Watson had been a nice little spark on kickoff return last week. And then with him hurt this week, instead of letting Amari Rodgers take that back over, they went to Keyshawn Nixon. He let, I think there were five kickoffs total. He let four roll through the back of the end zone for a touchback, and then he brought one out. Head full of steam. I mean, if he gets one more block, he breaks that thing off and head to the house most likely. But that was one of the few bright spots on special teams today. Guys, there was a moment that just felt so eerily similar to that game last year versus the 49ers in the playoffs. Pat O'Donnell had his punt blocked after a guy got through, and it was returned 20 yards for a touchdown. There had been a missed field goal earlier in the game. Altogether, this game felt like the first time there really were some special teams miscues. In your opinion, Spoon and Ryan, the missed field goal that Mason Crosby had blocked earlier in the game, Matt LaFleur said he thought it was a high snap. Mason Crosby told me after the game he thought the operation was fine. Mm-hmm. Coming off his foot, he thought it was good and didn't realize it wasn't until it hit Williams' hand. Was this special teams miscues today with the blocked field goal and the blocked punt return for a touchdown same old Packers special teams? Or was it one of those where this was just not the Packers' day across the board and special teams got caught up in that and it's, you know, not necessarily a concern moving forward?
Well, I think the Jets got the Packers twice. I think the blocked field goal, yes, the snap was high. That probably didn't help, but they had a lot of penetration in that gap. Mm-hmm. And so someone didn't pick up their guy correctly. And then on the black punt, there was miscommunication between the long snapper, Coco, and Dahlen Levitt. And I'll bet on Dahlen Levitt 9 times out of 10 that he was right. But Coco went and blocked to the right, and then he comes back to the guy in the middle. And Levitt thought he was going to the right and stayed in the middle, and that left that guy to run free. So I don't know whose responsibility, but I would say that it's more than likely the long snapper's fault. And you just can't have that, especially down in that area. You know, that's a killer.
Yeah. What makes this different or not different? Because it was carbon copy of the playoff game, right? The blocked field goal in the first half and the blocked punt for touchdown in the same end zone in the second half.
Run into the same corner.
It's the exact same thing. Blocked field goal in the half in the playoff game against the Niners. Then, obviously, the blocked punt. What makes this different or not different is how they respond. If last year, starting, what was it, week 5 in Cincinnati on, they couldn't never get it turned around. They could never fix it. They could never recover. It continued to just cave in and cave in and cave in until they were buried. This is one game. It was bad. You can't have that. If they get it turned around, it's different. They weren't able to do that last year. Can they do it this year? We don't know yet. But that starts now, because you cannot allow it to avalanche and become a season-wide problem after one bad game. That to me is what will determine whether or not this is carbon copy to last year or if it's different.
Yeah. Next week should, on paper, be a get-right game. You head to D.C., you take on the Commanders, who by all likelihood and what it seems like will be quarterbacked by Taylor Heinicke. Guys, Taylor Heinicke had a decent little game against the Packers here last year, though.
Yes, he did.
I mean, that's a gritty little quarterback. Could end up being a gritty little team. Who knows? Is this one of those weeks? Let me back up. Robert Tonyan told me after the game, this is one of those weeks where you figure out who you are as a team. We thought that would kind of be the case last week. What overall do they need to, quote unquote, figure out this week, Spoon?
Well, I don't know. They need to figure out who they are and what their strengths are and what they're going to play to. Mm-hmm. That's it. I mean, figure out what you're good at, particularly offensively, but defensively too, and stick with it.
So the exact same thing as all season, but it's just a different week. That's what we've been saying all year.
Same story, new location.
They haven't figured it out yet. What's the Commander's record? Anyone know off the top of their head?
Not good.
Yeah, I lost the Bears on Thursday night.
Which is not what you want to do.
I'm sorry.
They beat them.
Beat the Bears.
I know a lot of us didn't want to watch that game, but I'm pretty
brutal. It was
horrible. I tried to block that because I like football.
Let's see. Their current record is, they're fourth in the NFC East. Shocker.
Yeah, they're one in.
They are. Why don't you just tell me, Google? It's going to make me do math. They are 1, 1, 2, 3, 4. They're 2-4.
So that's my point. There's almost no team in the league that is a get right week for this Packers team right now, because every game has been difficult, other than you can say week two, right? Every single game has been difficult. And almost any team is going to be a tough test, because this is a team right now that in many ways is lost. They have a lot to figure out. I'm not saying they won't. I don't know if they will or not. But right now, freeze the frame, they've got a lot to figure out. This is a rare exception, and it comes at the perfect time where they have a team that they should handle, they should beat. This should be the point where you start to figure those things out, because of the schedule layout, because of who you're playing. They should be able to do that against the Commanders, even on the road. I don't know if they will, but they should, and they've got it. This is one that they've got to start figuring some of this out.
Well, Matt LaFleur talks Monday afternoon. I'm sure he'll have a lot more to say after watching the game film. Our colleague Pete Doherty said on the Facebook Live, he said, if I had to guess, Matt LaFleur's not leaving tonight, and he's already got the game tape fired up.
Sounded like it after the game.
Yeah, he'll be locked in. So we'll see what he has to say on Monday afternoon. Whatever happens over this next week, we will be there to cover it for you all. So stay tuned to PackersNews.com for full coverage as we wrap up the loss to the Jets and look ahead to Washington. Thanks, guys. As always, this has been the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com. 19!